ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we are going to chant a verse that has a purport, but I will read the translation of the previous verses. Text 13 and 14. Thereafter, King Indra very firmly took up the thunderbolt manufactured by Vishwakarma from the bones of Dadichi. Charged with the exalted power of Dadichi Muni and enlightened by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Indra rode on the back of his carrier, Airavata, surrounded by all the demigods. While all the great sages offered him praise, thus he shone very beautifully, pleasing the three worlds as he rode off to kill Vritrasura. My dear King Parikshit, as Rudra, being very angry at Antaka, Yamaraj, had formerly run toward Antaka to kill him, Indra angrily and with great force attacked Vritrasura, who was surrounded by the leaders of the demoniac armies. Okay, now we are going to chant. Tatasuranam asurai. Rana paramadarunaha. Tritamuke narmadayam. Abhavat pratame yuge. Tatasuranam asurai. Rana paramadarunaha. Tritamuke narmadayam. Abhavat pratame yuge. Ladies, Tata, thereafter, Suranam of the demigods, Asurai with the demons, Rana, great battle, Paramadaruna, very fearful. Treta Muke, in the beginning of Treta Yuga, Narmadayam, on the bank of the river Narmada, Abhavat, took place, Pratame, in the first Yuge, millennium. Thereafter, at the end of Satya Yuga and the beginning of Treta Yuga, a fierce battle took place between the demigods and the demons on the bank of the Narmada. Herein, the Narmada does not mean the Narmada River in India. The five sacred rivers in India, Ganga, Jamuna, Narmada, Kaveri, and Krishna, are all celestial. Like the Ganges River, the Narmada River also flows in the higher planetary systems. The battle between the demigods and the demons took place in the higher planets. The word Pratame Yuge mean in the beginning of the first millennium, that is to say, in the beginning of the Vaivasvata Manvantara. In one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus, who each live for 71 millennium. The four yugas, Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali, constitute 1 millennium. We are presently in the Manvantara of Vaivasvata Manu, who is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Imam Vivasvate Yogam, Proktavan Aham Avyayam, Vivasvan Manave Praha. We are now in the 28th millennium of Vaivasvata Manu, but this fight took place in the beginning of Vaivasvata Manu's first millennium. One can historically calculate how long ago the battle took place. Since each millennium consists of 4,300,000 years, and we are now in the 28th millennium, some 120,400,000 years have passed since the battle took place on the bank of the river Narmada. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripa tamaham bande shi gurum dinataranam. So first, after Dadichi Muni gave up his body voluntarily for the benefit of the demigods and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, actually Dadichi's sacrifice is wonderful, is amazing, that somebody, he was a very great mystic yogi, so he could give up his life voluntarily at will. So he was a great devotee also, because he did it to please the Supreme Lord. Because the Lord directed the demigods toward Dadichi Muni with that request. So he knew that, and willingly he gave up his body. So that understood, then Vishvakarma, he created a weapon from the bones of Dadichi Muni to kill the demon Vritrasura. So, we all know, well, at least theoretically, that death is very painful. Like in Dadira Maharaj, he mentioned that in one of his lectures, that he was having some attack, you know, some kidney attack or something. Can't remember exactly, but the doctor told him that it is as painful as at the time of death, the pain one may feel. So it's very painful, and at that time to concentrate the mind on Krishna is not so easy. It's very difficult, actually, unless one has practiced during his lifetime the process of Krishna consciousness very seriously, very faithfully. Is very difficult, very, very difficult. But of course, Dadichi Muni, after he gave up his body, he went back to Vaikuntha, to the spiritual world, because he was free from ahankar, false ego. When we speak of the devotees' pastimes, mean pure devotees because they are free from ahanka or false ego. While we are still in the identifying with the body and mind, we have our false ego, ahankar, or activities under the body. We are still having action, reaction. But when somebody is free from that identification with the mind and the body, then his activities are linear or times, because it's not under the three modes of the material natures. So, of course, we have also, as we have heard, one has to die to live. Die to live. And in relation to that, there is a story that one Indian businessman went to Africa to do some business. And after finishing his business, he was having a walk in the park, in a little forest. And he saw a very huge tree, and on the branches of that tree, many beautiful parrots were there, and very colorful, very beautiful. So he felt the greed to take one of those parrots with him to his home in India. So he went behind the parrots, and moving very fastly, he could capture one of them. So all the rest flew away. So when he went back to his home, he put this beautiful parrot in a cage and was giving him fruits and honey and nuts and all kinds of nice things. And he started teaching him Hindi, to speak some words in Hindi, even sentences like that. So after 2 years, he decided to go back to Africa for his business things. And before he left, he asked the parrot, "Oh, my dear parrot, probably I'm going to see your friends again in that forest. Do you have any message for them?" The parrot said, "Yes, actually, please tell them that I remember them with great love and I'm missing them. But I'm happy in this cage eating the fruits and nuts you give me. So please tell them that." "Okay." So when he went to to Africa, and after he finished his business, he went to that same forest and he gave the message to the parrots who were there on the branches. And amazingly, after giving the message, one of the parrots fell dead to the ground. He said, "What is this? This is very strange. Maybe they were very attached to each other. What? I don't know. That's very mysterious." Anyway, when he went back to India, he was telling the bad news to his parrot, you know. "I'm sorry to tell you that, but right after I finished giving the message to your friend, one of them fell dead." Surprisingly, his own parrot fell dead in the cage. "What is this? This is very mysterious. I can't understand this." He started, you know, to cry, "My beautiful parrot," because he was so proud of his beautiful parrot. In India, no such parrot was there. Anyway, he was very sorry, and, you know, "I lost my beautiful parrot." So he took the dead body from the cage and took it out, put it in a garbage can, and he left it there and walked it back to his home, to his house. As soon as he did that, the parrot flew from the garbage can and stopped a branch of a tree. And he was like, "What is this? You cheated me. You wasn't dead. Why you did that?" "Well, my friend in Africa, through you, gave me a very important message." "And what was that message?" "The message was that I have to die to live." "To live freely, I have first to die. To fake that I was dead." So in the same way, actually to live eternally, to serve Krishna, we have to die for so many things in this world. So many, you know, allurements, attachments, and distractions. So many things. We have to start dying for all these things, you know. That's called anartha nivritti, you know. We start to be very serious about giving up our material entanglement, attachment in our heart. Doesn't mean you have to give them up externally, everything. It's not possible. But internally, we have to develop this detachment spirit. And after all, when we understand that I can't give up anything because then nothing belongs to me, everything belongs to Krishna, the only thing we have to give up is the false idea of that I am the proprietor or enjoyer of the material things that I have or I don't have, or I wish to have. So in relation to today's verse, it is very interesting, Prabhupada is mentioning, that the Narmada River mentioned in this verse doesn't mean the Narmada River in India. But the same river in some higher planet. So Prabhupada mentioned these five rivers that actually they are all of them in the heavenly planets. And they also manifest themselves here in this earth planet. The same way as the abode of the Lord, Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka, although they are here in this planet, but they are also eternally manifested in the spiritual world, Krishna Loka, Goloka, Vrindavan. And not only that, Sanatana Goswami mentioned in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the eternal associates of the Lord in Goloka, Vrindavan, they have also their respective expansions in Vaikuntha and also in the heavenly planets. So when the Lord comes to this earth planet to perform pastimes, those expansions that are in the heavenly planets playing the part of demigods, they come to take part of the Leela of the Lord. So in this way, universe, like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, glorifying the Lord's creation, is so full of varieties and colors and wonderful things that are beyond our imagination. Prabhupada said once, what scientists know about this universe? They know nothing. But just by reading the Vedic scriptures, the Shastra, we have so much information about this universe. Prabhupada mentioned that in some higher planet there are such huge eagles that they can fly from one planet to another. While flying, sometimes they put off an egg and a small eagle come out following his mother, flying to them. So these are amazing things, That's why sometimes people think that there is some Hindu mythology or something, because they are very, very wonderful. But if we accept that the Lord has achintya shakti or unconceivable potencies, then everything is possible. Everything, the possible and impossible, is there. So imagine that the Srimad Bhagavatam is mentioning something, this battle between demons and demigod, and this happened only 120 million years ago. It's nothing. So the time in the universe works differently, for the demigods and for us, it's very, very different. It is mentioned here that in one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus. And each Manu lives for 71 millennium. Millennium means 4,300,000 years, the four Yugas. Sata, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali. Together, these are 4,300,000. And this multiplied by 1,000 is one day of Brahma, which is 12 hours. In the 12 hours of Brahma, 14 Manus lives, and each one of them live for 71 millennium. And this battle happened at the beginning of the millennium of Vaivasvata Manu, the sun god. So, such wonderful information, so much details about how this universe function according to the plan of the Lord? And what is the purpose of creating this universe or this material world? Sometimes people ask like that, why God created worlds with so much problems, so much difficulties, so much suffering? And actually, the creation of this world is an act of kindness of the Lord toward the jivas, or the fallen living entities. Because one purpose is to fulfill the desires, the material desires of the jivas, to try to enjoy themselves separately from the Lord. So the Lord very kindly, He created the world where we can try to enjoy our senses separately from Him. But the second and most important purpose is that after trying to enjoy for so many lifetimes, we get frustrated in our attempt, and then we come back to our senses and try to understand the purpose of life, try to serve the Lord, try to become eternal servant of the Lord. And that is the actual purpose of this creation, to give a chance to all living entities to come back to their original position. So, once a devotee asked Prabhupada, did Krishna create this world to satisfy our desire to enjoy separately from Him? Prabhupada said, yes. Then the devotee said, He's not fulfilling that because we're not enjoying, we're suffering like anything here. And Prabhupada laughed. Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna's not giving any guarantee that you will enjoy in this material world. You may try as much as you can, but he's not giving assurance. No? So it's not the fault of the Lord. It's our fault because our free will, we misuse it. So we came to this world. This reminds me, some years ago, one devotee left the movement in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada came to know why. He had some philosophical doubts. And one, the most important one for him was, why Krishna gave us free will if He knew that we were going to misuse it? And Prabhupada laughed. Prabhupada said, He wanted that Krishna make us like a stone, no, like a machine, a robot, no free will, no desire, just, what is the use of? Love means free, voluntarily. Otherwise, what doesn't have value? Doesn't have value at all. This reminds me of a story of Gandhi when he went to England to ask, for freedom from the British, independence, India's independence. They told him, the ministers and everybody told him, look, you are not prepared now to have your independence. In the future, when you will be ready, we will give you that. Now, you will make a mess out of everything if we give you now the management. And he told them, we want the freedom to make mistakes. I mean, freedom is so valuable, even if by misusing it to do something wrong or mistake, still is, we want to have it. Because freedom is so valuable, so precious. That, of course, and freedom means you can do the right or the wrong thing. So we have to learn how to do the right thing by taking direction from Guru and Krishna. Not from our mind. Mind, we can't trust the mind. In the Bhagavad Gita, of course, it is explained how the mind and the senses and the intelligence are related to each other. It is said that the mind is the king or the queen of the senses. Why? Because without the help of the mind, the senses can't work properly. For example, somebody may say, can you please repeat that? I didn't hear. how that happened. The sound came in the ear of everyone. So why one person hear and another one doesn't hear? The same thing. Because the person was unattentive, meaning without the help of the mind, even we can't use the senses properly. So the mind is considered the queen or the king of the senses. But above the mind is the intelligence. And what is the function of the intelligence? The function of the intelligence is to give direction, to give discrimination. The mind just accept and reject. I want this, I don't want this, like that. But the intelligence can say, okay, this is better than this. For example, somebody is walking the street in Alach, and the tongue send a message to the mind, I am very thirsty. So the mind give the order to the legs, okay, walk toward that shop, we are going to drink a beer. So the legs walk toward the shop. But then the intelligence intervenes. The intelligence says, one moment. Why beer? No. Drink orange juice, it's better. That is if the intelligence is okay. If the intelligence is not okay, it's not all right, will tell the mind, okay, this brand of beer is better than this other brand. You take this brand. But the intelligence is always discriminating. It's always telling the mind what is better to do. Of course, the process of Krishna consciousness is to purify our intelligence. So we can develop our transcendental intelligence. And this can be done by hearing, by taking intelligence from Guru and Krishna, by following their intelligence. Then we can also develop spiritual or transcendental intelligence to know when our mind trying to convince us of something wrong and don't identify with it. You know, it's an exercise. You know, we have to practice daily because it's easy or easier to engage the senses, you know, in a devotional service. But, of course, we have to do an effort for that too, no doubt. But it's more difficult to engage the mind, because the mind is always rebellious. Always try to keep one corner, you know, for Maya. So that needs an exercise. And Prabhupada gave a very nice exercise for the mind that anything we think about in this world is made of material energy, either gross or subtle. So this energy is the inferior energy of Krishna. So as soon as we think of something material, subtle or gross, then that should lead us to think of Krishna, because this is the energy of Krishna. So why not to think of Krishna? If we have to think about something anyway, because we can't stop the mind from thinking, feeling and willing. That is the function of the mind. But when we think, feel and will in relation to sense gratification, then we are entangled. But when we direct this thinking, feeling and willing toward the service of Krishna, then we are free. And of course, at the beginning, sometimes we are Krishna conscious, sometimes we are Maya. So that means we have to make an effort how to increase our Krishna consciousness and to diminish our material attachments. It's a process, it's a scientific process, and it works if we practice it properly under the guidance of Guru and Shastra and Vaishnavas. This is the process. So, and by understanding this process, we can develop transcendental intelligence. So we can direct the mind properly in Krishna conscious way, so we would not be entangled in sinful activities and the reaction that comes from it. So, also, here, this reminds me also that Once, when Prabhupada visited the Venezuela, South America, in the morning walk, he told us some amazing thing about the universe. He said that there is a planet in this universe where there are huge mango trees. Each mango is the size of an elephant. And when this mango becomes ripe and fall from the tree, a mango river is created. Imagine a mango river. And the demigods, they come in their airplanes with their wives, and both banks of that river, when they dry up by the sunshine and the air, that becomes gold, Prabhupada said. And the demigods come and take that semi-soft gold and make different ornaments like necklaces and bracelets and earrings, all kinds of things. They don't have to work hard to go to the jewelry shop to buy, some jewelry, for the wife or the family, whatever. Prabhupada said, and what is the gold here? When I was a child, Prabhupada said, I did see a gold coin and silver coin, but now that everything is paper and plastic, where is the opulence? So one devotee asked Prabhupada, we see in Latin America that the pre-Hispanic culture is very much similar, have some similarities with the Vedic culture. Prabhupada said yes. In former times, all the planet was following Vedic culture. But in due time, that was given up. And then Prabhupada said something amazing. Prabhupada said, you know that Lord Ramchandra, he went to Brazil, the Amazons in Brazil, through a tunnel. Prabhupada said there was a tunnel 8,000 miles from Sri Lanka to the Amazon in Brazil. And Lord Ramchandra and Lakshman were taken through that tunnel. Actually, that is mentioned in the Ramayana, that before the battle between Ravana and Lord Ramchandra, they were spending the night there, and Hanuman made a fortress around them, around Lakshman and Ramchandra with his tail. He made his tail so huge, so big, that made a fortress around them. But then Ravana's brother, Mahiravana, he came underneath the earth, and while they were sleeping, he kidnapped them and took them through this tunnel to his capital in Brazil. Prabhupada said that all the gold was coming from Brazil mines to Sri Lanka. That's why the Golden City. Prabhupada asked if still there was gold in Brazil. You say, yes, a lot of gold is still there. Anyway, the idea was to sacrifice Lord Ramchandra in front of Goddess Kali. They have a big cave with goddess. So they asked Lord Ramchandra to bow down in front of Goddess Kali. And Lord Ram told them, you have to show me how to do it. I don't know. I'm a prince. You have to show me how to do this bow down thing. So all the demons bowed down, and Lord Rama took a sword and chopped off their heads. Prabhupada said this happened there in Brazil. And you will be amazed to know that we have a farm in the Amazon in Brazil. The only way to go there is by boat. There's no other way to go. And nearby that farm we have there, there is a very ancient town called Hanuman. Very ancient town. So and not only that, I found out also that before that country was named Brazil, had another different name by the natives, and the name was Pindo Rama. So the name Rama and Hanuman are still there. And even in the Amazon in Venezuela, there is a mountain called Meru. So from where they got all those names? I mean, that proved that the Vedic culture was spread all over the world in ancient times. So I will stop here if anybody has any comment or questions. Yes, Prabhu Lakshmi Narasingha. So, is there any microphone? Thank you, Madam Mohan Prabhu.
The question I have is, I don't know if I didn't hear the context in which you said this, but the question I have is, you said, if one is under the modes of material nature, then they're under the laws of karma. And if they're not under the laws of material nature, then that's lila.
Yes.
I've often heard, maybe I've even read it somewhere, that when a devotee surrenders to spiritual master, he or she is no longer under the laws of karma, but they're under Krishna's direction.
That's correct. So but Prabhupada, yes.
No, so just put it into perspective
yes.
for me.
Prabhupada gives the example of a fan, you know. When you unplug a fan, it doesn't stop immediately, but takes some time. So, but if we plug it again, then of course will take longer time. You know, if you unplug once and again, then will take longer time for the fan to stop. Meaning that once we accept the spiritual master and we surrender, we are supposed to follow his instruction. And following the instruction means not to commit any sinful activities anymore, isn't it? So that means we are not doing any bad karma. See? Of course, although we may not be liberated, that because we are following the liberated person, then we are in a liberated position. While we are following properly, you know, strictly, we are in a liberated position. But if we give up or stop following the instructions of Guru and Shastra, then we are again entangled. See? I don't know if that answered.
I think what I'm understanding, you're saying that there is an intermediate stage.
Yes.
Because if we say that we're under the laws of karma, that means we're influenced by the modes of material nature, or we're not under the laws of karma, then we're in lila. So obviously we're not in lila.
Well, actually we are part of the lila of Lord Chaitanya. This is Lord Chaitanya's movement. And everybody who takes part in this, you know, this is a pastime to chant and dance and, you know, serve and preach. This is actually the pastime of Lord Chaitanya. We are just taking a very tiny, small part in that lila of the Lord. Because we want to be, you know, an instrument in that, you know. But we have to keep ourselves, you know, properly situated in devotional service by following the order of Guru, you know, and Vaishnava, Shastra. Then we are fine. But if we stop doing that, we deviate, then again the law of karma are, you know, are there. This reminds me once a girl wrote Prabhupada saying, Prabhupada, I've been in a movement for 6 months and I've been chanting all this time my 16 rounds and following the four regulative principles. Why do I still have cold? I mean, sometimes we think like that, you know, that I'm above the law of karma because, no, we are still, you know, we never should think like that. This material world is so dangerous, Prabhupada said, in Venezuela, that even by walking, if we step on an ant, we have to pay reaction for that, Prabhupada said. He said, according to the man law, that if one man kills another man, he's chastised. But if he kills an insect, he's not. An animal, he's not. But according to the laws of God, even if you step on a small insect, you have to pay for it, Prabhupada said. Of course, if we walk to serve Krishna, then Krishna will take that into account to diminish, you know, the reaction. And also we perform Sankirtan Yagya daily, so that also will counteract that. But at least willingly, we try to avoid doing any harm to any living entities or to commit sinful activities. Then we are rightly situated. You know? That's the middle stage, you know, of practicing. When somebody reaches the stage of perfection, he's above the stage of practicing, although he externally still follows everything, you know, properly to give example to others to do the same thing. But he's already in the perfect stage. So until we reach that stage, we are not in the Lila platform, but in the Sadhana Bhakti platform. All right, if there are no more questions, then comments, then we can stop here. Yes? Give the microphone, please.
When we're talking about, like, you do some descriptions of heavenly planets in the class, like the mango trees.
Can you
yes. You know those mango trees? And
yes,
planets?
Yes.
So when we think of that, sometimes, you know, especially when they start, these descriptions start to get criticized as mythological. Mm. I mean, we see a mango tree on Earth, and I guess the tendency is to think, well, it's like that, only really big with extremely juicy mangoes. Mm. And that's why it creates rivers. But it sounds like you're talking about some whole other realm of biological engineering to have something that is reminiscent of a tree of that size that has fruits that can do that sort of thing.
It is not in our experience such a huge big tree. So we take it like something, you know, maybe mythological or whatever. But we have to accept that there are things beyond our experience. And we accept on the authority of the Shastra, you know. The Vedas, the Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining that these things exist there in some higher planet. So we accept the authority of Shastra. We have to accept some authority. Either the scientist or the Vedas or whoever, some authority we have to accept. So we choose, you know, voluntarily to accept the authority of Shastra and Guru. So whatever they say, we accept. That is our position. We can't have experience of that now, if it is true or not. It is not blind faith either. It is faith based on realized knowledge. By hearing, one starts to understand. One accepts things in the same measure that one understands them. And one can't understand those things with the gross material senses. That's why it is said, Atasya Krishna Namadi Nababhagriyam Indriya Sevamukhe Jivata Swayameva Spuratyada. When we engage our senses in the service of the Lord, starting with the tongue, by chanting the Lord's holy name, by taking prasad, then we start to become purified. And when we start to become purified, all these truths start to become revealed. The truth about the Lord and His creation and His form and name and pastimes start to reveal. It's not something just theoretical. It's a vivid thing. But it takes some time. It takes purification. You know? Okay, thank you very much. La Prabhupada ki jai. Granta la Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.